Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back in on the drive, Carrington here, Spectre here, Fanning here, taking you up until 6 o'clock. Coming up momentarily, we will talk to Rex Hudler. He will join us here momentarily. Today's pop quiz was Jurassic World. Spectre is calling HUD, so we cannot tell you that. Chris Pratt turns 49 years old today. I actually have seen the new Jurassic World. I believe it's called Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Save your money.
Seriously?
Save your money.
See, that's
money.
Why I don't trust trailers. The trailer's terrific.
It is not a good movie.
God.
I took my sister to go see it.
Did she like it?
She's 15. She loved it. She said, "That's a really good movie. I can't believe you don't like it." I'm like, you know what? If I was 15, I'd probably like this movie too, but I'm not 15 anymore. The movie was not for me. I mean, the dinosaurs are always going to be the dinosaurs, and with the special effects, it's always going to be really cool, but that is not a good movie in the least bit. For my NBA fans out there, Woj put out his mock NBA draft today, at least the top six picks. Certainly somebody I would listen to. He is not just picking these names out of thin air. He has DeAndre Ayton going number one overall, Marvin Bagley going number two to the Kings, Luka Doncic going number three overall to the Atlanta Hawks, Jaren Jackson going fourth, Mo Bamba and Trae Young going sixth overall. I would guess that Michael Porter is going to finish seventh or go seventh in the NBA draft. I think Chicago has kind of been pushing to take Michael Porter seventh overall. So again, if you missed it, these names are courtesy of Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Luka Doncic, Jaren Jackson Jr., Mo Bamba, and Trae Young. He thinks are the top six picks in tonight's NBA draft.
Well, I'm sorry. What did you say? We got HUD?
I thought you had something to say about the NBA draft. But
no, I'm sorry. I was reading the red screen that Spec shot me real quick.
Yeah, no worries. But that is who he thinks is going to be the top six picks for tonight's NBA draft. I'm excited for the NBA draft today. I think that this is a very unique NBA draft that I think you can find a star at six overall. You can find a star at seven overall or a little bit further down. A guy like Michael Porter, I think, could have one of the highest upsides in the NBA draft. It seems very possible to me that he could go seventh overall today to the Bulls and end up being the star that he could have been projected to be out of high school.
So Wojnarowski has Trae Young going ahead of Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that, right? We were having this whole conversation about this before the show about Trae Young. What happened to him? You know, he was this dude that the entire college basketball world was falling in love with. I remember you telling me he was must-see TV. He was must-see TV for you. I mean, you were going to tune in every single night to watch Trae Young, and here's a kid that's fallen big time. Number six overall. He sort of reminded all of us, right, of Steph Curry light.
Yeah, I don't know if really six is really falling. I mean, if you look at it, certainly Luka Doncic has a lot more cachet as being a point guard prospect. The bigs that are in there, I really think size more than anything and maybe a little bit of decision-making. I think just it's going to be really hard to really talk yourself into it. The same way it was with Steph Curry. If you remember, I mean, Steph Curry, obviously a really great college player. It's not like NBA scouts foresaw this happening. He was going to turn into the player.
Yeah.
The biggest reason was, can his body hold up for 82 games? And remember, Steph had the ankle problems coming out of Davidson.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that's going to end up hurting Trae Young. I mean, he's small.
Yeah.
And being able to take the pounding that it is in the NBA, I mean, going top six overall if you're Trae Young, certainly nothing to sneeze at.
I mean, that seemed like an impact guy right out of the gate with Trae Young. You would agree with that, right?
I think he can be a guy that can score from day one. He
really
can shoot.
Is he big enough? Can he handle that? I mean, look what happened to him towards, you know, the longer the season went on, it seemed the more it kind of wore on him. You know, and he's a thin dude. I mean, at least Steph's got a little beef on him now.
Let's go to the phone line right now to talk to Rex Hudler. Our guy HUD joins us right now on the Drive Hotline. HUD, you there? HUD is not there. I had no clue you were dialing up AOL. Spectre, you have completely botched Rex Hudler so far. We'll talk about something else until Rex Hudler comes on.
It is an off day today for the Bulls.
Yeah, it is. So if he doesn't come on, that's perfectly fine. I understand him trying to spend time with his family. Sometimes we hear from people how they're always going to boycott ESPN. We hear people say that all the time. I'm tired of the politics on ESPN. I want to separate the two. I'm boycotting ESPN.
Yes.
I don't really believe a lot of people that say they're boycotting ESPN, but
you
that
can't.
Is a sentiment that is out there when it comes to a lot of people. there might actually be a reason for you now to boycott ESPN. I don't know if you had a legitimate reason to boycott them before, but they are hiring Jeff Triplett. Jeff Triplett. Yeah, that same Jeff Triplett as
the
their
forward progress guy?
As their rules expert. I don't know how you can spin that as your rules expert.
Especially when he blew a huge call that in part cost the Chiefs the playoff game, right?
Correct.
I mean, DJ drills Mariota, ball comes out, and he calls forward progress on that play. And now he's going to be the rules expert on ESPN. Guy that doesn't know the rules? So, dude that doesn't know the rules is going to be the rules expert for ESPN.
Certainly doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Right now, we'll head to the phone line. They say the second time is the charm, and maybe it's the third. Rex Hudler joins us on the drive. Hud, you there?
Yeah, buddy.
Hud, last time we tried to talk to you, it sounded like dial-up internet. You good? You all right?
All set, bud.
Hud, it is raining right now. I know it's an off day for you guys. What is the typical rain day activity for a baseball team?
Oh, well, typically everything's the same for a player. I mean, modern-day players nowadays, they have electronic devices. They have their phones. You know, they have a lot of things that can entertain them. They have the video games, of course, you know, and they have card games. They have a lot of things. In our day, we were a little bit more limited, you know, since, the technology has improved greatly in over the years. You know, they have no trouble entertaining themselves.
Hud, let me ask you this. I need you to defend me. I need you to defend something for me.
Okay.
Defend the delayed steal to end the game last night that ended the ball game. Can you defend that decision and that play for me?
No, you know what? I should have been able to be on top of that. My job is to let you know before, sometimes, and after.
Yeah.
And I knew, I'm thinking, what do you have to lose? I was just getting ready to say it. Steal the bag. Do the best you can. He's never had a stolen base this year. I don't know if he stole any last year. But it would have worked. He just didn't go one more crow hop. Three big hops. By then, the catcher's already caught the ball. He sees that you haven't taken off. And that's when it works, is he lobs it back to the pitcher. He only took two. He was a little excited, and it didn't pay off. And you know, the young catcher has never caught a game before in his life. He'd never thrown out a runner from the plate. And he was bound and determined to catch him if he went, and it was a perfect throw. So I'm all for that. What do you got to lose? Guys, yeah. Get him in scoring position. You know, Ned had a couple of pinch hitters, I'm sure, coming up. But I have no problem with him trying to steal that base. It was a perfect throw. If it's not perfect, or if it hits the pitcher in the teeth,
which it almost did.
Yeah, it's a whole new ball game. Yeah, I it was terrible when I saw the ball go by his face. I went, oh gosh, because I thought he was going to get it because the pitcher never saw it, and that was 6 inches away from him having serious dental surgery.
How does it? It seems like teams like the Royals right now, teams that are struggling, find different ways to lose. Is that the way it feels right now for the Royals? Like, we've seen them come up with different ways to win in their championship years. It seems like right now they're just finding a different way to lose every single night. And last night seemed like one of those. I haven't seen that in a long time, a delayed steal, and that's how the game ends.
Yeah, you know what, I like I said, I was all for it. I thought it was a good situation. Dozier has good enough speed. He could have probably tried to take in just a regular steal. But look, the delayed steal is something we haven't seen a lot. In the last couple of seasons, and that's a very effective play from a guy that's not known to steal bases. Like I said, had he taken one more crow hop, it would have worked. But he didn't. He was a little excited. You know, there are ways to lose, and I've been on teams that has been like this, and I can tell you that it's very frustrating, and you get a little bit angered, like Escobar got tossed. I mean, you know, there's a lot of that stuff that goes around. A few of the guys got thrown out the other day. They have to find a way to make their breaks, and eventually it'll change. They'll start winning some games again. This team is not a bad team, but they're in a rut, and I've been there before, and it's just unbelievable how things are contagious in this game. Someone's got to step up, get a big hit, you know, and they're going to blow out somebody, and I'll bet it's Houston. You watch. They're going to get them this weekend.
Hud, I want to ask you about Alcides Escobar. Ned Yost a couple of days ago said that they were going to start experimenting and putting him around the diamond. You were a guy who was versatile, who played a lot of positions. How hard is that to do?
Oh, it's not easy. I mean, it's not tough because he's an athlete. You know what? I had no issues because really the main commodity is speed. If you have speed, speed makes up for a lot of mistakes. But instincts, with no problem. I was drafted as a shortstop. Eskie was obviously a Gold Glove shortstop. I was nowhere in his league. But I was a decent athlete. And so when you have that skill set, you can move around. But you have to have the right mind. And I think at this time in Escobar's career, he's in his ninth year, maybe tenth year. He's ready to accept that. He sees it. He knows that he's able to get his full pension, maybe being a utility player. And when I watched him in center field yesterday taking balls off of the bat live in batting practice, I was a little surprised, but not really. But he was taking perfect routes and making plays. He had his new glove. He's not used to wearing a glove that's 3 or 4 inches longer, which is perfect. It helps you get to more balls. But he was taking nice routes. You could put him out there in Houston and not have to worry about anything.
Yeah, because
that's the kind of athlete he is. And you put him anywhere in the infield, he'll be fine. I think he's going to find it exciting like I did. And like Whitley tells me all the time when I ask him, hey, when you go to the ballpark, do you ever know, that you're playing a certain position? He says, sometimes Ned will let me know, sometimes he doesn't. So that adds an extra excitement for a player, especially at Eskie's age, to be excited. Now, the part he's going to have to learn how to deal with, that's riding the pine for nine. American League, there's no pinch hitting. So when you're not playing, you're not starting, your chances are you ain't getting in the game. So he'll have to deal with that, and he can. That's part of it. But he can become a guy who encourages. You don't just sit on the bench. You work the guys. You have fun with them. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't think they give hot foots anymore. Or I don't think they pass the time like maybe we did. I would hope to see some of that, and maybe that they would have some life in there. But that's what you provide. Part of accepting the role is accepting the bench part of it. And the bench part of it, your work is never done. You're always encouraging guys to come off the field. You're working the players. You're motivating the players. That's how you add value to yourself and your career.
Hud, last question here, because I asked this because, and you can attest to it, it just seems to me very difficult to, at Alcides Escobar's age, when you are so used to playing one position, to just one day wake up and then play center field. Like, I'm very skeptical of it being possible at a high level. Not saying he can't do it at all. I mean, he is a talented baseball player. It just seems hard at his age to just pick up and then play an entirely new position, seemingly overnight.
Well, you know what? It's hard to explain, but when you're a baseball player, C-Dot, and you've trained and you've done that your whole life and you track a baseball, your footwork is impeccable at shortstop. It's going to transfer over to center field when you have another second. You have another second to react. Now, I'll say 2 seconds might be too long, 1,001, 1,002, but 1,001, in the infield, you're reacting on contact. That ball's coming at you smoking 110, sometimes 105, 110. That you have any time at all. So the feet are the most important thing, the motor. You got to have the feet. And when you're in center field, that second extra even helps you even better. And he'll take him some time to track a ball. But in batting practice, taking balls off the live bat, that's going to help him do that. And when the game comes, look, he might take a phony route. It might take him a few times to learn his routes. But you learn your routes when you're working and practicing before the game. That's when you make your gains. And that's what he does. I watched him yesterday. Look, he haven't done that my whole career. He's going to be just fine. You watch him, C-Dot. I can't wait.
And that's our guy, Royals television broadcaster, Hud. Hud, please stay dry out there.
Oh, buddy, are you kidding me? We're going to go to Houston, and I'm looking forward to talking about some wins. And I don't care how good they are. Look, in baseball, any team can beat another team, and it's time to end this stuff. And believe it, they're going to do it here next to tomorrow.
That's our guy, Rex Heller. Always good talking to you, Hud. Thank you.
The Hud man.
The Huds.
I'm with Hud on that. I mean, the most athletic guy typically you have plays shortstop. You can move that guy around anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, Hud also in that interview said they're not that bad.
Well,
you know what I mean?
So, Hud's
I mean,
towing the company line a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Go. So to me, you got
Hud's towing the company line a little bit.
To
right
me,
there.
You got to kind of, you got to take Hud's positivity when it comes to the 2018 Royals with a grain of salt. You know, I'll pay a dollar for how negative that was. I got no problem doing that.
It's not Positivity Wednesday, though.
I'll pay a dollar.
Oh, you still
though.
Pay up anyway.
I'll pay a dollar right. For that one. Coming up on the other side, I've been wanting to talk about this for 2 days. I know there are some fellas out here that can relate to this next door, and I just want a little bit of understanding.
Yeah.
I'm not in this situation. You're not in this situation.
Thankfully.
Spectre's not in this situation.
Yeah.
But I just need a little bit of help to understand what some of you fellas are out there going through in your personal life. I'll tell you what it is next on The Drive. Back in on The Drive, we'll get to this news story here momentarily, but some very, very sad news. Kate Spade, As you guys probably have heard the story, she committed suicide, I believe it was last week. I apologize if I'm wrong on that, but I believe it was last week. Could have been 2 weeks ago. But she passed away. Her funeral was today. Her father passed away last night. A statement from the family, quote, "We are deeply saddened to announce that Katie's father has passed away last night at the age of 89. He had been failing in health of late and was heartbroken over the recent death of his beloved daughter. He was at home and surrounded by family at the time of his passing." Man, a very, very, very difficult stretch for their family. So Kate Spade, she passed away a couple weeks ago, and her father passed away last night. Could not even attend her funeral. Very, very sad time for their family.
Yeah, I'm reading the story on it right now. He was almost 90 years old, too, so... yeah, terrible.
Yeah, a very, very sad story. In a little bit of lighter news, I have a little bit of fun here about another very serious situation, but I do think there is some lightheartedness in the story. Maybe some of you have heard of this gentleman. His name is Jesse Williams. Jesse Williams got divorced.
He's an actor.
He's in Grey's Anatomy. He's like an actor. He does a lot of other stuff. But a lot of people know him from Grey's Anatomy.
Got it.
So he and his wife, then at the time, they split. He then agreed to pay her $33,000 a month in, quote, spousal support, and they also have children together.
How are you supposed to live on that, feed a family on $33,000 a month? Unbelievable.
They then went back to court because she was unhappy with the $33,000, and then a judge decided that it was time for him to pay $50,000 a month in both spousal and child support. So you would think $50,000 was enough, but no, 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 no. Another judge has ruled that my man Jesse Williams has to pay $100,000 a month in spousal and child support to his ex-wife and his kids. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't pay child support, or you shouldn't take care of your family, and you shouldn't take care of your responsibilities as a man. But $100,000? Shit, you for 100 racks a month? Not a year.
Yeah.
Not every 6 months. She hits you for $1.2 million a year. My man makes $500,000 a month. First off, I want to figure out how you're making that much. I got to figure out what you're doing.
Of Grey's Anatomy?
I want to figure out what you're doing every month. So that's essentially 20%. You got to pay her 20% a month? That's criminal. How we signed up to a system that allows this to happen? How we signed up to a system that doesn't at least cap what spousal and child support mean? What does spousal support mean in this?
Well, I think what it means is, and I thankfully have never been in this situation, but I think what it means is she probably didn't work. She was taking care of the kids. She supported him and his endeavors. And so, therefore, she gets, you know, like 20% of the situation here.
You know what spousal support is? A job.
Yeah.
Like, your wife has spousal support. She works.
Yeah.
You have spousal support. You work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to make light of the situation, but my man shouldn't
have to. It
seems
excessive.
He shouldn't have to pay her $100,000 a month.
How many kids do you have? Like 14?
Two. They have two kids.
Yes.
This is criminal. And I know some of you fellas out there are paying child support, and they're taking an exorbitant amount out of your check, which is wrong, which is unfair. I'm just asking how we have, as a system, have signed up for this system when it penalizes this man. $100,000?
I will say this. He must have really pissed her off. I mean, for her to say, I need 100 girl a month from you, like, he must have really, really pissed her off.
I'm just telling you, I remember my grandma told me this when she was alive, and God rest her soul. She told me there was an old Johnny Walker song called "It's Cheaper to Keep Her."
Yeah.
I would have made that relationship work. I would have made that relationship work for $1.2 million a year. I don't know what the problems were.
Yeah.
I have no clue what the problems were.
Maybe try separate bedrooms or something.
Like, maybe you were the problem. Like, maybe you're famous, you're on Grey's Anatomy, you're a nice-looking guy. Maybe you have a tough time being faithful. Well, you know what? For $1.2 million a year, I would have stuck by my wife and kids for that. That is a lot of... I just don't know why, as a society, we haven't tried to tackle this problem. This one guy just said, I'm an electrician. I have one kid. I pay $800 a month. You imagine just every month they come in your check and they take $800?
No.
$800.
Yeah.
What are you paying for $800? You're paying for her hair to get done. You're paying for nails. You're paying for that goes beyond child support.
I think you're paying for her dates too, probably.
Yeah, that just, it doesn't make any sense to me. Again, how we've allowed a system to set up that can take $100,000 out of your month for this. Let's not count Uncle Sam's got to take their cut. I'm sure he's got an agent. I mean, what's left for you at the end when you make $521,000 a month?
Well, it sounds like he's got $400,000 left a month.
Yeah, but then you got to factor in taxes and all the other stuff, man. Yeah. All that money is certainly
she's
not going
to pay taxes
to you.
Too, though. You know,
I mean, I mean, she's still coming out ahead of regardless of whatever taxes are coming out.
I'm joking here. I mean, that seems ridiculous to me. I mean, it seems absolutely ridiculous. She gets $1.2 million a year from her ex-husband.
Which is absolutely crazy. Coming up on the other side, former NFL linebacker Joe Mays joins us in studio. Our friend of the show is here to hashtag talk football. Coming up on The Drive. Back in on The Drive, we will get to Joe Mays joining us in studio momentarily. But if you're following the NBA draft today's Shams Charania of Yahoo Sports. Baby Woj says that Phoenix has locked in on DeAndre Ayton as the number one overall pick, and Sacramento has locked in on Duke's Marvin Bagley. So the number one and number two picks in the NBA draft are done, according to Shams, and I believe Shams. He is Baby Woj. Phoenix is going to take DeAndre Ayton. Sacramento is going to take Duke's Marvin Bagley. I think Sacramento would take Luka Doncic, Speck. But I don't think Luka Doncic would play. Like, I think he's going back overseas if it comes down to having to play for the Sacramento Kings.
Marvin Bagley may just stick to music instead of going playing for the Sacramento Kings.
What kind of cash is Luka Doncic make playing over there? Was he in Spain? Is that where he's at?
Yeah, he was in the Euro League. I mean, good money. I mean, it's certainly better for him to come over here and play. I think he told Sacramento his people, we're not coming if you have to do him. So if you're Sacramento, you just can't.
So he's one of the few guys that actually has a little bit of leverage here.
Yeah, I mean, just because he's not from America, so I mean, he certainly can just say, I'm not coming to America if you draft me, so they're not taking him. They seem like they want him to go to Atlanta. Joe Mays, former NFL linebacker, joins us in studio. Joe, how are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
We were supposed to plug your place, but nobody can plug their own things better than them. What are you doing these days?
Yeah, so me and my wife, we opened up a holistic wellness center. We are the Leia Center. We're located on 6th and Walnut, right in the River Market area. And what we do, we aim to educate people on how to help their bodies heal itself through natural medicine, meditation, and movement. So we try to hit all phases, mind, body, spirit, and, you know, it's all about keeping ourselves healthy and taking care of ourselves.
I'm not going to ask you to snitch on anybody or give anybody's names. I would never do that. But we were just talking about Jesse Williams. He has to pay $100,000 a month in spousal and child support. This guy texted in. My buddy is getting divorced. He has to pay $2,500 a month for child support, and she was the one that cheated. I live in Washington. Listen every day. Go Chiefs. I know you guys in the locker room, you guys talk.
Yeah.
What's the highest number you've heard one of your teammates had to pay in child support?
Nothing near close to that. I was, you know, hearing $5,000, $10,000, but $100,000, that is definitely a lot of money. But at the end of the day, he's making $500,000 a month. You're giving $100,000 to your ex-wife and your kids. Like, just go ahead, toss that money, keep it moving.
She's not the one acting, though. $100,000 is excessive.
I mean, that is excessive, but, you know, he got married. You know, they got married, they got together, so they knew what could happen, what could potentially happen, and they still went along with it. So it's all a part of it.
I'm getting some texts from my wife right now, so I'm no longer a part of this conversation. I just want to let you guys know when it comes to the – she's like, man, he's raising her kids. He's still acting. She's raising the kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's a job in itself, man. I think we're not giving women enough credit, you know, for what they do at home because, you know, if you put each and every last one of us at home with a kid all day, just imagine what you would do and what you wouldn't do.
I'm not denying that, but I know my mom did it for a lot less than $1.2 million.
That's true. You know what I mean? That's true, but he's in a totally different tax bracket, man. Yeah. So.
No, that makes sense. That's a fair point. Sean Barber, he was here the last time you were here. You certainly know Sean. I got a lot of respect for him.
Oh.
This is what he said about the Chiefs defense potentially in 2018. I want to see if you agree.
Yeah, man, we ready to roll. We good with who we got. We don't need to worry about those few players that are from the 2017 season because obviously they wasn't good enough to get it done. So we upgraded. We upgraded everywhere. So the defense is going to be I'm guaranteeing the defense is going to be solid this year.
That's a Sean Barber guarantee.
No doubt. Like I don't guarantee much in life, but I'm guaranteeing this defense is going to be top 15 in the league this year.
Sean Barber thinks the Chiefs could be a top 15 defense in the NFL. Do you agree?
I mean, top 15 defense, I say yes. But we're talking about, you know, once the season is over and done with. So they're going to have to go through their growing pains. You're going to have a lot of young guys out there on the field. They drafted all defense, and they're expecting a couple of those guys to be able to play defensive reps. So it's going to take a learning curve for them guys to get a chance to understand the defense, get used to the speed of the game. It's not going to happen overnight, But at the end of the day, they have the potential to be a top 15 defense, yes.
Oh, whenever you guys are talking about defense, are you guys going more off yards given up? Because last year, the Chiefs were 28th in yards given up. Certainly not good enough, but the Patriots' defense was worse than them from a yard standpoint, but the Patriots only gave up 15 points per game.
Yeah.
Are you focused on guys getting into the end zone? Because we all can agree the Chiefs' defense could be a whole lot better this season than they were last year, but they were middle of the pack. They were average when it came to points allowed, but we all can agree last year's defense wasn't good enough. Are you guys in the defense, are you looking more at yards given up, or are you more looking at just guys getting in the end zone?
I mean, us on the defensive side, we look at everything. Like, we don't want to give up not one single yard when they run the ball. So we're always constantly focusing on, you know, stopping the run and then forcing them to pass and forcing the quarterback into bad situations. So technically, it's the best way to look at it is points given up, points allowed. Because at the end of the day, if your offense putting up 21 to 24 points a game and you're only giving up 15, more than likely you're going to win a game. So I think that's the most important part of it. The yards, that's going to come, man. I mean, we are in the NFL. We are playing against other professionals. It's going
to
happen.
Talking to Joe Mays, former Chiefs linebacker. He's in studio with us. Third down, how important is that? I mean, to me, that seems – that. Forget yards, forget points. If you can get off the field on third down, right? I mean, is that – if you had to, like, stack in the list of important stuff – and stats that you guys look at, where's third down?
I would have to say third down is top two. I think red zone is very important.
Okay.
Third down, that right there, that's money down. That's the down where you get a chance to make a play. That's huge for your team on either side of the ball. And us being on defense, man, it's all about doing whatever we can to put our offense back on the field. You know, we're just out there just trying to keep the opposing team from scoring and giving the offense back the ball. So that's super important.
Do you think the Chiefs are going to have to change the way they play defense? We've heard this bend don't break thing for, what, the last 4 or 5 years? It's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do think that they have to change the way they play defense, how hard is it to change philosophies and change the way you're doing things?
Yes, I do think they're going to have to change just until you get a chance to see the personnel up close and personal.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, it's not hard. It's all about tailoring the defense for your guys instead of your guys being tailored to the defense. You know, it's about, you know, utilizing your strength and trying to cover up your weaknesses as much as possible. I felt like last year it was, you know, a lot of man-to-man principles. And, you know, besides 2-2, I don't think they had the guys to play those man-to-man principles, which is why a lot of yards was given up in the passing game. The run game, you know, I've always felt like Dontari Poe was the key guy that was in the middle because he's able to take up two and still be productive and still, you know, wreak havoc in the backfield. So I think those two things, if you tailor around what you have, your personnel, and making sure you're doing what's best for the players instead of worrying about just the scheme itself, you're going to be fine.
Right now we're talking to former NFL linebacker Joe Mays. What do you make of what the Chiefs did this offseason in overhauling their defense? It came very clear to me that Brett Veach had a plan.
Oh, yeah.
Our defense wasn't physical enough to stop the run. Our defense wasn't fast enough at certain key positions. What do you make of what the strategy was defensively this offseason?
I thought they made great moves. I mean, it came at a cost. You know, they had to get rid of number 11, man, you know, which was a very, very good quarterback for us. He was very stable, which is what you need in, you know, an offense and a quarterback to keep the ball, hold on to the ball and not turn it over. So it came at a cost, but I think they definitely got younger. They got faster, that was the purpose. That was the whole, you know, thing heading into the offseason. They need to get younger, which is why they got rid of, you know, DJ and Tamba, and they let some young guys come in and play some ball. So I felt like they made some good moves. We still got to see what's going to happen, though. You know, I mean, these are good players they brought in. But at the end of the day, you can be as good as you want to on paper, but you got to be able to show that on the field.
One saying I've always heard football people say, and some they say in other sports, I think it's mostly a football thing, that the biggest jump, the biggest improvement you make is from year one to year two.
Yeah.
Because you've been in the system, you understand the system, and the game slows down. How true is that? Because I'm thinking of a guy like Passanio. You now kind of redshirted a little bit the first year.
Mm-hmm.
Now in year two, I'm expecting you to produce. I'm expecting you to do something this year for the defense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's definitely huge. You know, taking that next step in year two, because you get a chance to step your game up in the NFL. You play the first year. Yeah, it's tough because the speed of the game. I mean, these guys are bigger, stronger, faster. We say it, but when you get to the field, you really, really notice that. But heading into year two, I feel like the game does kind of slow down a little bit. You know exactly what you're doing. And you know the scheme and everything, so it's a lot less thinking. You don't have to worry about it. You just go out there and react and play and be a football player, which is what we brought in to do anyway.
Yeah, I just was really looking at the defense, and I feel like every team says we want to get bigger, we want to get stronger, we want to get faster on defense. Well, I mean, that's everybody's goal when it comes to football.
Yeah.
I was really happy to see that it felt more targeted than in years past. Like, they really look for hybrid guys, that guys that can maybe come down in the box and help with run defense, and guys that could play the pass as well. I just feel like Veach's strategy to try to accomplish younger, faster, and all that kind of stuff, it seemed much more pointed than other years.
Oh, of course. I mean, when you have a year defensively like they had last year, it's definitely going to be pointed. They're gonna overhaul everything and try to figure out, okay, what is it that we're weak at, which they decided that they were very weak at defense, which mm-hmm. at all three levels. So they brought in guys at all three levels to try to, you know, get this thing rolling again and turn it over. So it was pointed. You know, it was pointed. He already knew the direction they wanted to go in, and he executed.
How long does it take for a guy for a young guy on the edge to really find his groove? Because, and I guess I'm specifically talking about like somebody like Tano Pastrnak, a guy came from Villanova,
mm-hmm.
you know, who I'm curious if he's going to be the guy on the other side of Justin Houston. How long does it take for a guy like that to really feel comfortable in the NFL? Is it year two, year three?
I mean, it takes a little bit of time unless you come across, you know, a Von Miller, a guy where he's definitely the exception. But I would say it takes a year or two just to get your feet wet. Because, you know, at the end of the day in college, we all got by just by being athletic or, you know, having something that we were really, really good at. In the NFL, you got to put all those things together. You got to be athletic. You have to play with technique. You have to play with leverage. Like, you got to put all of those things together. And sometimes it's harder for some folks than others. But, you know, I feel like, you know, this is going to be the year where you get a chance to see these young guys really blossom.
Yeah.
To see if the coaching that they received last year and everything that they've learned is going to come into play. So I'm excited, man.
Me too.
Right now we're talking to Joe Mays. He is with us in studio for another 20 minutes or so. If you got a question, text something in. Text line 69306. Just here talking football on a Thursday. You said something really interesting about Marcus Peters. I want to talk to you on the other side about Bob Sutton and what you see, I guess, flaws in his scheme and how you would improve it. Coming up on The Drive. Back in on The Drive. Joe was telling us a pretty cool story. We'll have him tell you on the air here momentarily. But right now we're talking to former NFL linebacker Joe Mays. Joe, thanks a lot for coming in today again. We appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
You were talking about Marcus Peters, and you were talking about, aside from Marcus Peters, maybe last year's defense didn't have the proper corner secondary to run that man-to-man principle. You know football as well as anybody. You know fans will complain about the defensive coordinator and play calling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What flaws do you see in Bob Sutton's scheme?
The thing about the scheme is I enjoy playing in that scheme. That scheme is awesome. It's the same scheme that they brought from the Jets, which you've seen the Jets were very successful. But then again, when you look at the corners that they had, though, Antonio Cromartie, Darrell Revis, they had two corners that can play man-to-man all game long. When you're trying to bring that same scheme here, you got to make sure that your personnel match up to what you're trying to run. So, you know, trying to play man-to-man with, you know, the corners that was opposite of Marcus Peters, it showed time and time again that those guys were starting to get tired, and plus it wasn't built to play man to man as much as they were. So there's really no flaws in the scheme itself. It's all about tailoring the scheme around your players.
It sounds like bad coaching then. I mean, if you're trying to run a scheme that your players can't run, that doesn't sound like a very good idea to me. And I don't know my X's and O's like you do, man. Mm-hmm. It just sounds like common sense to me.
Well, you can look at it two ways. Most everyone look at it the same way you just said. Yeah. You know, it's bad coaching. But then again, when you put in the coach's shoes, you're showing confidence in your players to go out there and execute. Mm-hmm. You know, we brought these guys in here for a reason. They're on this team for a reason. So they should be able to play the style of defense that we're trying to implement. So I'm going to show confidence in you, whether it works or not, that you're going to continue to come out here and play and you know, hopefully pick it up at some point. You know, obviously it didn't work, and at some point you got to be able to, you know, change up what's going on.
Yeah.
Joe, speaking of scheme, can you explain to me, and I'm sure a lot of the people listening right now are on the same boat when it comes to football ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a player as talented as Marcus Peters, and then you have wide receivers as talented as Amari Cooper or Kraft, you know, pick whoever wide receiver you want.
Mm-hmm.
What's the logic in not having my best cornerback always on the other team's best receiver? Because we hear that argument all the time of, well, we don't have him do that. Well, why not? Why not just have Marcus Peters move with Antonio Brown? Can you explain to us what the logic behind that is?
Well, the logic behind that is you have players that's really, really good at what they do, but they may be used to only playing on one side of the field. So some teams they like to run the corners like Peterson from the Cardinals. He run with everyone. He's comfortable doing that. Mm-hmm. When you have corners that's really, really good at playing on one, you know, one area of the field, you want to keep them over there. Whether it's because of them or whether it's because of what the scheme offers. So it's kind of some give and take there. You know, at some point you got to realize your best player should be on the best receiver. But if he's only used to playing to one side, you don't want to move him around and expose him.
I remember watching a Cowboys-Niners game back in the day when Jerry Rice was still playing. Mm. And the Niners went into to Cowboys Stadium, and they put Jerry Rice in the slot. And they absolutely shredded the Cowboys because they didn't adjust instead of putting their best corner. I mean, I never understood that. What's the difference in, like, moving sides and because I think a lot of people just say, hey, he's a great corner, we'll put him in the slot if that's where Antonio Brown is.
Yeah.
How hard is that to?
I mean, looking from the outside in, it shouldn't be hard.
Yeah.
Right. But sometimes it is. When you get used to having your help on your right inside, you know that you can be heavy with your left. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that kind of plays a role into, you know, being comfortable, and especially if you've done it high school, college, then got to the NFL and continue to do the same thing. You don't want to move anybody out of their comfort zone. So it's all about having the guys that's comfortable, that can play on one side and really lock that side down. But, you know, trying to move a corner from the outside to the inside, that is completely different, which is why you hear of nickel corners or guys that play outside. They're strictly outside. You try to move an outside guy inside, it just won't work.
What about the other way, though? Kendall Fuller, he's a slot corner, and now they're going to put him on the outside. How hard is that?
That's not hard, because it's a lot harder. Yeah, those guys on the outside are on an island, but when you're playing on the inside, you have to keep leverage.
Yeah.
Like, if you have inside leverage, you have to stay inside. Sometimes the guys have inside leverage and they give it up completely. You have no help. Mm-hmm. So if you're a nickel corner, you're mostly a man guy. So they want you to stick to whoever that slot is. And that right there can be tough.
And right now we're talking to Joe Mays, former NFL linebacker, for a couple more minutes. We've been doing a drive investigation of trying to figure out how 2 years ago in the playoff game, Justin Houston was on Antonio Brown on an important third down. Who was the wide receiver or running back that one day audible happened, a shift happened, and the next thing you know, you're guarding Marshall Faulk? Like, who was that player for you?
I was on Sanders from the Broncos, the receiver from the Broncos, Emmanuel Sanders. So we were playing cover two. So that cover two with me, I had to have the middle of the field. So if number two went vertical, I was going with him.
Oh boy.
No matter who it was.
But tight end, receiver. You can keep up with him though, right? You can keep up the speedy receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I had a 10 yard cushion. You know what I mean? I had a 10 yard cushion just to make sure I got deeper than the deepest, but he ran the same route and then he cut it short. So, you know, not only was I already on top of him, I had to slow down what I was doing and try to break and drive on the ball. He caught the pass. It was like a 17 yard gain. So, I mean, you can give that up, especially when it comes to playing the entire game. As long as you're not doing it the entire game, you're fine.
When you see that and you're like, I'm so screwed here. Is that what you were thinking?
No.
You're like, I got Emmanuel Sanders. I got to guard this guy right now.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I'm thinking, okay, I know his strength is my weakness. He's faster than me.
Yeah.
So I got to make sure that I'm playing technique. I got to make sure that I'm staying on top of him as much as I can and try to force him to the outside, which is where my help was. Yeah.
You said Sanders at first. I was thinking, you can't be that old for the only Deion. Sanders I was thinking of.
Oh, nah. Emmanuel Sanders.
Or Barry. You know what I'm thinking?
Oh, hey.
Yeah, I'm thinking I heard Sanders. I'm like, couldn't be Barry in this scenario.
I asked for the double team on that one.
During the commercial break, we're learning more about you. You grew up in Chicago. Who was your favorite player growing up?
Favorite player growing up, Donovan McNabb. He was also a Chicago guy. And, you know, growing up where I grew up, you know, a lot of times you don't get
rough, right?
Yeah, it's rough in Chicago. Yeah. I mean, it's not a lot of people that's giving you that positivity to move out and move forward, right? So when you find someone that has done it and they're successful at it, why not try to emulate what he's doing and try to add some of that into what you're trying to do? So, you know, him being a guy that grew up in Chicago, making it out, being a two-sport athlete in college, and then making it to the NFL and be successful, you know, that was someone that I really looked up to. So it was pretty awesome to not only try to follow that same path, but to get a chance to play with him when I got drafted to Philly.
What was it like to be able to tell him that story? Because I'm assuming you did when you played with him in Philly.
I mean, at first you're kind of like, well, I'm not sure if I want to tell this guy that, because yeah. I come off as just some kind of homer. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it meant something to me. So it didn't really matter. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted him to know that you were the reason, and what you've done up to this point is the reason why I was able to make it out. And I just want to thank you, you know, for being, yeah. you know, that person that I can look up to, you know, for being that positive influence, because there's not very many that you can look up to. I just wanted to thank him and appreciate him for doing what he did.
It's crazy to hear people from Chicago tell that story, because I think a lot of times depends on age. Because, like, for you, it was Donovan McNabb. Mm-hmm. Like, Derrick Rose is that for a lot of kids. Oh, so to yeah. hear, like, it kind of depends on, like, what generation you are. Yeah. There's a certain athlete that made it, and you can say, and if so-and-so can do it, I can do it as well.
Oh, yeah. And Derrick Rose, he was a huge part in, you know, really being, like, that mentor or that guy to look up to for a lot of guys in Chicago, mm-hmm. too. Especially, young, you know, the generation at, well, I guess it's the same generation because we're around the same age. But, you know, to see a guy grow up the same way you grew up, yeah. and yeah, he was talented. Yeah, he did everything he could, and he made it, you know, to big places. But he come back and also still be a part of the city and do everything he can for the city. You root for guys like that, and you appreciate guys like that. So, I mean, he's done so much for the city of Chicago, not just playing, but giving back and you know, constantly being in the community. It's pretty awesome.
And you're an Eagles fan because of Donovan McNabb. Oh, yeah. So how'd you feel about the Super Bowl then? I would imagine that. Were you probably getting choked up on something like that or no?
Nah, you know what? I didn't get choked up, man. I was definitely excited. You know, one, because, you know, my guy Wentz, you know, he went to North Dakota State. Yeah. He won a couple of national championships in North Dakota State. To see him win a world championship in the NFL was pretty awesome. Two, Doug Peterson. I mean, yeah. you know, I was with that guy in Philly at, you know, as he was just starting to get into coaching. Mm-hmm. And then have him here in Kansas City, you know, having a bigger role and seeing what he's really developed and involved into, it was pretty awesome, man. So you just cheer for guys like that. And, yeah, I'm definitely happy for the success that they've had.
Joe, plug the center one more time.
Yeah, man. So, hey, we at the Leia Center. We're located on 6th and Walnut, right in the River Market area. And we do aim to help educate people on how to help their bodies heal itself. So if you're just trying to take care of yourself and not depending on anyone else to take care of you, give us a call.
I mean, Fanny needs to go there after some of his old man baseball games. You gotta see man. The way he walks in here.
I walk in on Tuesday mornings, man. I look like I'm 65.
I got some
meniscus injuries I'm dealing with here.
All right, so I got a question. Is it baseball, softball, or kickball?
It's baseball.
Oh, all right, cool.
Come on,
hey, man, look.
I was about ready to come down to the Lay. So I'm 6th and Walnut, and now you say I'm playing kickball.
Hey, man. Hey, we still do it. I mean, we still grown boys around here just going out and playing, sure. you know, playing games and having fun, man.
I'm just saying, I did knock in the tying run in the sixth inning with a solid single up the middle, man.
Yeah.
Does make you feel like you're 20 again.
Oh, yeah. That's very clutch.
Yeah, yeah.
That was former NFL linebacker Joe Mays. Joe, always appreciate talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming in today.
Hey,
appreciate
thanks for it. Having me.
Coming up in 120 seconds, I have a question to those of you on social media about the future of drafts. Well, we will get into that coming up on The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.